an interview with Dr. Ernest L. Boyer, former Chancellor of the State University of New York and presently President of the Carnegie Endowment for the Advancement of Teaching. July 6th.
No?
Oh, my. He was born in China and I was born in Chicago.
The same day.
That's right.
I don't think I have ever met anyone who was born the same day.
Well, there's another coincidence. And we were born on Benjamin Franklin's birthday, and also on the 200th anniversary of his birthday.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Very interesting.
Oh, my.
January 17, 06.
200 years after Ben Franklin was born.
Just strange. Bentley is the scientist, although I have had some exposure.
Yeah.
To scientists.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you have a big and interesting job on your hands here. How long have you been working now?
Well, this is something I've been doing with my, more or less, my little finger, because I'm working on a book on human valuation. I'm interested in that. It's the result, I think, of my experience both at Brookhaven and then for 10 years as college and university dean. I feel quite strongly that there is a gap in the curriculum, which is the systematic study of human values. I'm an historian, not a theologian. But I have an interest in values because my father and grandfather were both ministers. But it seemed to me that there's an analogy here. At Brookhaven, I would go to a colloquium, sit in, and the speaker would get up and in English say what he was trying to do, and then he would go to the board and put the mathematics on the board. And I was completely lost. I'd never gone beyond three. There were biologists. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There were biologists, chemists, physicists, mathematicians, reactor people, accelerator people, engineers. They could all understand the mathematics. And it was clear to me that mathematics was both a common language for the sciences and a tool. When I became a dean first at Cornell College in Iowa and then Bucknell, I had to listen to committees and socially to people in social sciences, humanities, sciences, talk back and forth. And it was obvious to me that there was no common language. Humanities and the social sciences and evaluational aspects of the social sciences. And that the arguments would go back and forth past each other. And it bothered me. And yet here I had this example of the sciences having gradually came to conviction with me that what was missing was the structure, the evolution, structure, function of human values as a systematic study. And at that time, I knew nothing about value theory. I knew nothing about axiology. And when I had my sabbatical at Stony Brook, I went to the Union Theological Center for one semester in the Yale Divinity School for the other, studying values, the philosophy of religion, and ethics. And I felt I needed that kind of background. And since then, I've been working on an outline. I have an outline of a book that I want to write. It's in Palm Coast. There is a community college there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to take me on.
Terrific.
I've given them that one.
Terrific.
But that's
wonderful. Well, we need that.
I think we do.
Really do.
I think we do.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm doing in my retirement.
Well, that's great. You're busy, busy, busy. All right, have a...
This is an exercise in the memory.
All right.
Use of the memory now.
I'm going to have to stir some.
Number one, when did you join SUNY?
Okay.
And what institution did you come? Who appointed you? What positions did you hold?
Right, I joined the State University of New York July 1, 1965. I went to the State University of New York from the University of California at Santa Barbara. I was appointed by Chancellor Sam Gould.
Sam Gould?
Yes.
I've interviewed him.
Yeah. He appointed me, and my first position was a new post that had been created. In fact, the first one he created as Chancellor. It was called Executive Dean for University-Wide Activities. It was Dr. Gould's view that the university had administrators who would were working on the separate pieces of the organization. But he wanted someone who would look at the enterprise overall and take on those functions that were more integrated. And so the title University-Wide Activities fairly well described that new position. It was without precedent, and I had to decide what University-Wide Activities meant. I served in that position from 65 to 68. And in 1968, I was appointed Executive Vice Chancellor with Sam Gould, which was the number two position in the central administration. And then in August of 1970, I became chancellor. So those were the appointments that I held until January 1977, when I resigned to go to Washington, D.C. as U.S. Commissioner of Education.
Well, that takes care of one and two.
All right.
And I guess part of
three. And three, yes. Let me just repeat again. It was a fascinating position, the Executive Dean for University-Wide Activities, since Chancellor Gould felt very much that there should be efforts made to create some sense of cohesion. It had been organized categorically around types of campuses. There was an executive dean for four-year colleges, universities, community colleges. And yet he had great fascination with what I guess you'd call the horizontal missions, those that cut across. Now, in addition to my, just as a footnote to that, in addition to my office, he had an executive dean for international activities, which was system-wide. That was Glenn Old.
That's Glenn Old.
And he had an executive dean for, it wasn't called this, I think, but it was telecommunications. And that was Bob Thomas. Bob Thomas was trying to develop the system-wide technology, the TV network, and of course Olds is working on international. I had within my portfolio a whole range of activities that included such things as university-wide arts to the system-wide governance structures. I was responsible for the Faculty Senate development system-wide. I was responsible and helped develop a council of presidents in which we had a group of presidents who were advisors to the chancellor. I was responsible for helping to create a system-wide student association. I was responsible for university-wide admissions policies to the extent that they were existing. And I must say then during student riots, I became kind of the point man on the issue of crises. But also I was asked by the chancellor to develop a system-wide policy of affirmative action in 67. And so all of the issues that tended to deal with the overall policy matters were ones that I tended to be responsible for.
Vision, and to what extent do you feel that centralization is an important goal or aim for a system as large as Philippines?
Got a little cold in Chile where I was last week.
In Chile?
Chile, yeah. I think it's a very difficult thing to execute, but not impossible. I think it is appropriate for a network of state institutions to be guided by policy structure that gives some rationale and coherence to the effort, while still allowing for the uniqueness of institutions within that structure and, above all, the creativity and some degree of vitality for those who are working at separate campuses. Now, as I said, that's easy to say and very hard to do. It's very, very easy for a system to become suffocatingly uniform. On the other hand, I guess I still don't believe that the state of New York could handle 64 separate institutions that would be working directly with the division of the budget or with the legislative committees. So the matter of how to structure this in a way that has some, in a sense, statewide policies while retaining great vitality at the local level is a skill that I think many don't have, but I think the system needs to operate within those two dual obligations. Now, you could have organized State University in different ways. I thought for a time you might be able to organize it around four or five regional units with the university center. In fact, I pushed for that for a while, where you'd have a university center and a cluster.
I remember some expression of thinking along those lines at one point.
The other, you could organize it along the California model of having the community colleges, the university centers with medical schools, and the arts and science colleges as three separate systems with perhaps a coordinating board. I don't mean to say that the State University of New York in its current configuration is the only way to do it. I only know that you probably couldn't have each campus freestanding. So I think if I were starting over, I would probably choose another model than the one that exists. But I don't think that means it's necessarily bad. But
all right, you're talking partly to four.
Well, yes. Now, it's true, there was, of course, a senior person responsible for the university centers. That was viewed as a category of institutions that had unique mission and had some shared policies. So, you know, the central office of the university did have a vice chancellor for university centers. I think there was a clear expectation, certainly during my tenure, that the four university centers would be similar and that they would all offer advanced degrees through the doctorate, and yet not all of them would be evenly developed in terms of professional schools, or certainly in terms of the doctorates. I mean, I think there was a general expectation that Buffalo and Stony Brook would probably emerge over time as the most distinguished in terms of the breadth of programs, and maybe even in terms of the dimensions of their scholarship within a matter of several decades, certainly not overnight, and that the mission of Albany would probably, in its professional effort, be limited more to public service, for example, it may be education. And Stony Brook, or Binghamton, would perhaps develop a series of good graduate programs growing out of Harper College, but would have very few professional schools. Although under Bruce Deering, it developed in the field of technology and was developing some affiliation with the IBM connection. So, but I don't think it was ever imagined, at least during my tenure, that Binghamton would have a broad-based network of professional schools, but would probably have some very solid graduate and doctorate programs that were really an extension of what had been a very distinguished College of Arts and Sciences. But certainly it was always my expectation that that Buffalo, which had a long history, and Stony Brook, which was coming on very rapidly, surely in the sciences, but not exclusively so, and developing a major medical school, would be probably the two most broad-based university centers in the system.
Who was the person whose responsibility was the university centers? Was that Commissar?
Jerry Commissar, yeah. Not, now that's, I'm going to have to sort this out. A whole group of names flowed through. Of course, there was Harry Porter, and then there was Cy Surratt, then there was Lauren Barrett's, and Jerry Commissar. He was there during my tenure primarily as vice chancellor for personnel.
I see. Who was the vice president, I think, of personnel prior to him?
You're talking about Dave Price?
Dave Price was the person, yes.
Dave Price?
He died unexpectedly.
I hadn't heard that he died. Well, Dave Price was, of course, there when I came. He was one of the old-timers, and he handled personnel. When I came, I brought Jerry Commissar up from Binghamton, where I think he was provost, and he took responsibility for personnel-employee relations because I inherited the Public Employee Relations Board responsibility, and there was collective bargaining, so we needed to strengthen that unit.
Dave Price was extremely helpful to us.
Yeah. He knew the inside. He was a very bright man.
Yes.
Knew the inside and out of state personnel policies. Ran it all out of his back pocket. No one else began to understand the elaborate mechanisms, but Dave knew everything. He carried it in his head and was probably one of the best bureaucrats, and I say that in a complimentary sense, that there was.
Did you have personally as a spy?
Yes. Oh, I did often, of course, both as chancellor and indirectly before that with Stony Brook, mainly through the president, through Johnny Toll. I wasn't involved in a lot of the discussions about curriculum and faculty and staffing. Those were handled by colleagues. I was mainly involved with the campus and John Toll during on matters of budget and construction and the like. Well, it depends on the issue. The final decisions regarding budget, regarding new facilities, were made, I guess, ultimately by the board. Depending on the level of decision you're talking about. There were, I'm sure, a number of other matters dealing with curriculum approval, for example, and the like, that would have been done, I guess the decision would have been made by subordinates of mine in the central office. Personnel appointments the same way. They tended to be processed through the personnel offices in the central But on the larger issues, whether there was going to be a new building or what the decision would be on the annual budget, they were made by me or, as depending on the issue, recommended by me to the Board of Trustees.
We had what seemed to us to be difficulty getting a fine arts center.
What year was this?
I don't think that the fine arts center came until the late 70s. We had ideas for one even before Sam Boo came. That we had, and instead of backing us, he set up purchase, which took us back some. We had requests for a 1,500 seat auditorium in the Fine Arts Center. Somebody cut that down to 1,100. That was, I don't know, but the present stage is just barely large enough for a distant orchestra.
Well, I felt, I don't want to pass any buck, or but I felt, and I'm not speaking about the Stony Brook circumstance, which I did not recall. I did not recall being involved in the fine arts discussion. I could well have, but I don't remember it. But I wanted to make another point. I felt one of the basic mistakes that the State University had made in its construction during the 60s was to wholly underestimate the importance of art centers on almost all campuses. When I was chancellor during the 70s, I was just endlessly frustrated in going to campuses. The arts and science colleges, I think, had a maximum seating capacity of 300 to 400 in the new facilities that were built. And little cubbyhole of auditoria space and staging space, some kind of modern art theater open area, but no auditorium arrangements, no satisfactory place for concert drama. I just thought it was, in retrospect, a scandalously short-sighted view. Not only for the campus, but these colleges and university centers were very much the cultural center of their region. And what an opportunity was missed.
Yes.
And I go back occasionally, still go and speak in the gymnasium for events. No place to gather people. So I think, frankly, that was an enormously short-sighted facilities policy that was made sometime during the early mid-60s and almost like cookie-cutter fashion applied to all the new campuses that emerged. So I'm sorry that Stony Brook doesn't have a more adequate facility.
We are building a field house, but that's not quite the same thing.
Mm-hmm, no. Well, you mentioned, I know, as a matter of fact, I had no idea that Oscar Lanford was an unsuccessful candidate for the presidency of Stony Brook. Had no idea. Never heard that until this moment.
That's why I was running Stony Brook.
Uh-huh. And, of course, I was on the Stony Brook campus many times. I can't recall all of the occasions, but I visited the campus often. There was also another side to the contact. I was, during my days, especially as vice chancellor, I was very much involved in the student riots. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't only Stony Brook, to be sure, but Stony Brook was having a lot of hard times with the local police being mischievously interventionist. And so our job was primarily to keep these guys from running amok. And
the Republicans had gotten themselves into trouble over, I think, a sewer construction project.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed something. And did you ever see the brochure, half an inch thick, that they got out for the... raid on our campus?
No.
With a knight with a hauberk and armor.
You're kidding. Kind of a plan of action, you mean?
Plan of action, absolutely.
You mean?
For the television.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Well, it was a very bad time. But that was only a footnote to say that the contacts were multiple. Well, I had relations with three governors. Rockefeller was the longest. Malcolm Wilson for a brief period, and Hugh Carey. Without question, Rockefeller was the governor who understood and believed in and was enthusiastic about the university. It was a great delight to work with him. I saw him regularly, and I've said often that I learned when I was going to see Rockefeller that if whatever I was asking for, it wasn't a matter would he say yes, but rather how much would he escalate the request. He, so
so I ended up being very careful what I asked for, because I usually walked out with a bigger assignment than I expected.
Once you gave him an idea,
he took it, not only approved it, he'd multiply it. So you had to be very careful, or you'd end up with a lot more work than you ever expected. I found he would always see me within hours or certainly days of any request that I made to see him. He was delighted with the university, and I think for the right reasons. All sorts of snide comments were made about him wanting to have a building program or building edifices. I think he had a sense that this university was in the interest of the people and New York, and it seems to me quite a remarkable thing given his background. So he took great pride in it, and I think for the right reasons.
He was probably the capital from Dartmouth.
Yeah. More than that, I can say that he never made an inappropriate request in the 7 years, well, it's actually 5 years, that I was chancellor and he was governor. He'd call frequently on different matters, but he never made an inappropriate request.
Did he check with you the appointments to the local councils?
Mm-hmm.
Because
his appointment secretary would.
Yes. Because there was a wide variety, a wide range of competence, of understanding among those who were appointed to our local council.
Yeah.
He could have done so much better.
Yeah. I don't know. My sense is he took huge interest in